station promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to LATalkRadio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Overly Competitive Softball Player.
Mr. Overly Competitive Softball Player.
Some folks play softball for exercise. For others, it's a fun way to enjoy a beautiful day with friends and coworkers. But not you. No way. You play the game for keeps.
10 hours in the batting cage.
Yes, Mr. Overly Competitive Softball Player. You are truly the Ty Cobb of the Division D Co-Ed Citywide Insurance Underwriters League.
Slide in with your spikes up.
You even quit your church-sponsored team.
'Cause God only loves winners, yeah.
So the next time you're on Field 1 and hear a guy on Field 16 screaming at Joan from Human Resources for not hitting the cutoff man, you are hearing the rantings of Mr. Overly Competitive Softball Player, a real American hero.
Mr. Overly Competitive Softball Player.
Nice polyester coaching shorts and knee socks, loser.
Ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning and welcome to Wednesday, May 19th. And we're here just in time for Kara to finish putting on her makeup.
So you
guys can look at her and enjoy the scenery this morning.
Do you like that? Perfect.
Yes. You see, I mean, you're considerate, you know. You're thinking of our listeners.
Thinking of the people that might be able to see.
Exactly.
Even you, Sam.
Yeah. It's the way people imagine you to be, I suppose, right?
Well, even myself, like, I just feel more awake with makeup on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to put your face on when
gotta
you leave in the
morning.
Got to
right?
Put
my face on. Shoot. Was Mother Love hysterical yesterday or what?
Yeah. Wasn't she, though?
I freaking love that woman.
Yeah. Everybody loves that
woman. She's just so funny.
Yeah. She's very cool. She's very cool. I like her a lot. For those who don't know, Mother Love is now on LA Talk Radio, 2 o'clock every weekday. And she's
check
a riot.
Her out.
She's a riot. She's got a lot to say. You know, when you can sit here for 2 hours on your own and talk, you have a lot to say.
And not be taken away to loony bin, that is a big deal.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I talk a lot, though, too.
Do you?
Yeah, when I met people at the show, they're mm-hmm. like, you do a lot of the talking. I was like, oh, okay, well. Yeah.
Were you aware of it before they told you?
Yeah, but I kind of thought that's the way it flowed.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, well, maybe Sam should talk more, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So Sam should talk more. No, it's just fine the way it is. You can
okay,
keep talking.
Well, I was about to say, go for it, Sam, knock yourself out.
Yeah. So you told me you had a late night last night?
Yeah, I'm editing some stuff for my comedy reel, and I just, you know, when you get in of just oceans of information that's just not your brain type.
Right. So are you trying to learn how to do it?
Well, I'm doing it because I'm not going to pay anybody right now to do it for me, and I have a Mac, so I have all these little editing things, you know, not like, I mean, I guess I do have Pro Tools, but it's Pro Cut or Final Cut Pro or whatever it is. but I'm using like the iMovie, which is just simple, but it's still like learning the timing and learning the transitions and learning just all these little things. It's like different if you already know how to do it and you go in it and you just, oh, I just make myself do it.
Unless you find it a challenge to learn something new and actually enjoy it, you know?
Well, it's rewarding.
I think
rewarding.
You'll find it a lot of fun, though.
Well, it's actually pretty rewarding because even though I kind of want to fly through it. And then you have the creative part when you're editing something where you're really trying to tell the story.
Right.
And you're trying to take pieces to brand it or make it, you know, make it viable or whatever.
Right.
So there's that creative side that's working with it.
But don't go overboard with it. I mean, you know, just do it so it's presentable and stuff. And then you can fine tune it later, you know.
And it is. No, there ain't nothing high tech going on here. Okay, let me get it straight. Ain't nothing high tech.
But you can do some cross dissolves and stuff, right?
Yeah, I've got some cool little cross dissolves going on.
And
it's basic, though. It's basic, but it's It's also to selecting bits, because apparently like shorter clips do better on the internet of doing your bits. And so I'm editing stuff to kind of just make it quicker to the punchline, as opposed to, you know, just...
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So stuff
people's
like that.
Attention span is not very... it's not very large
these
days.
I kind of feel like when you're watching stand-up, and I mean, even comedians that I absolutely love, there's very, very few of them that I actually don't mind watching on the television or internet. Mm. I mean, I most of it, when you go see a live performance,
right,
there's kind of a magic to it. If they're good, there's a real live connection that happens. And then when you watch it on the video, it doesn't have the same feeling.
Mm, yeah.
And so I've learned, you know, keep it quick, keep it fun.
Yeah. Yeah, you should read up on it, you know? I mean, make it fun.
I'm so about to start my period, like, right now.
Really?
Almost any second. I can feel it. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Forgot people are listening.
Well, did you come equipped?
I figured out. Yeah, I do. I'm packing some heat.
So you were editing the video and stuff.
Editing the video, and that's gonna. It's boring to talk about. So I'm gonna talk more about how an ex-boyfriend, really good friend of mine still, has told me. He's like, you know, the period is just a really special time for a woman. And I was like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. He's like, it's just been so demythized or what?
Demonized?
No. Yeah, that too. Myth. Demythed or whatever. He said there's kind of like this special thing because it's
debunked.
There's just kind of this special thing to it because it represents life and fertility each month. And that's special.
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh, aren't you cute? Why don't you go get married?
Yeah, exactly. If he had to go through it, I don't think he'd say that.
But I kind of got what he was saying. I mean, I don't feel special about it by any means. But I will say that there is a time where you're like, oh, wow, my body does work. It can reproduce, right?
Right,
and
right.
And, you know, I can do children if I want. Not right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, if you want.
No. I just thought about that, man. What if I never had kids?
What if you feel, I mean, what if it turns out that you're like in your late 30s and you're running out of time and you really want kids?
I don't know. Yeah. I'll cross that bridge when I get to it.
You wouldn't have them out of wedlock, though, right?
No, I don't think that's fair to children.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you can live with a guy and not be married to them and still raise a kid, you know? But,
and why not get married, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, especially when you have children, you want to get married.
And people are like, oh, marriage is just a certificate, then just do it then. Mm-hmm. And there's legal ramifications to it. And I think there's a one foot in, one foot out kind of mentality people aren't being honest about.
Right.
They try to say, oh, it's not a big deal. Well, no, it's because you really just want the one foot in, one foot out. It's what I think. If you don't believe in marriage, it's fine, but...
Yeah. What about artificial insemination? Would you go for that?
No.
Huh? So you have to have a father.
I want to be married, and,
right.
and I
you
think
want it traditional.
Yeah, I think you begin with the ideal in mind. I mean, life throws you curveballs, and you work with it. I'm not saying you can't get creative. I have a family member who they did, I think, artificial insemination, they did some kind of
in vitro.
Kind of something where it wasn't working at all, and they had to get some extra help, and they did it. And I can't judge them, but I kind of wonder though if you. And again, you know, everybody's different, but this. Just to be honest, I was thinking, if you're going to such lengths to try to have kids, maybe you're not supposed to be having biological children. And that's not a bad thing. I was just thinking maybe you should adopt when there's such a need.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, you know, I mean, that's not going to stop anybody from doing what they're going to do. But that's just my opinion.
Right.
I mean, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think you better start looking.
Me?
Yeah.
I'm not stressed at all, Sam.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying you are. And you know what? Actually, you've got plenty of time.
I'm in my
20s. You're
going
to be fertile for a long time.
I mean, I've got like, 8 years or so.
That's true.
True. But
actually, more than that. I mean, some women in their early 40s have babies too without a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a bit riskier, I suppose. But
well, I just honestly, I don't want to live my life driven by biological needs.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I mean, my aunt, who is probably one of the most amazing women I've ever met. I mean, she's one of the first women drill sergeants. She's a professional motivational speaker. She writes children's books and songs. Her children's songs are sung in all these different daycares across the country.
Mm-hmm.
She's helped out so many people. She was a social worker for 20 years. She's lived a life of purpose, and she loves kids, but she wasn't able to have kids. And yet she's helped so many children.
Right.
And you know, somebody that thinks that you just need to have kids and that's the greatest thing of being a woman, I don't agree with that. I think that it's living a life of purpose, whatever that is. And it's sad that women feel like they have to justify their existence through childbearing when it's like this woman, my aunt, has touched so many more lives.
Do you really think that's the main reason women have babies? To justify
No. I think there's a societal pressure that comes along with it. And I was, you know, on Mother's Day, somebody put up a quote by, I can't remember, Gandhi or something, somebody that was like one of the greatest achievements that a woman can ever do is basically childbirth. And I think it is a miracle, and it's nothing to be downplayed, right? It is beautiful. I mean, it's life-giving. Right. And I don't really know what does top it. But I also do know that women are more valuable than just that as well. They're they're people, they're humans. So living a life where you're loving everybody around you that's not necessarily family, and you're serving people around you that aren't necessarily related to you, I think is kind of more profound. It's like, it's kind of, I'm not saying easier, but it's more natural to just love people that are nice to you. It's more natural to just love family members and people that are, you have to be there for, versus loving people that have no one, or serving people that no one else is there, or you don't have to. And I kind of wonder, you know, we come to paths in our life, and sometimes you can do both, sometimes you can't. And you, decisions have to be made where you're like, well, what life am I going to live? And I think they're both excellent. Or you can maybe do both. I don't know.
Yeah, you can try.
Yeah,
try,
but know? I mean, I don't think it's an either or. I think women are able to do, you know, be mothers and have families and definitely be, you know, philanthropic, or women are extremely multifaceted. That's not what I'm saying. But I do think that society kind of puts this stamp, you know what I mean, on women, like your clock is ticking, tick, tick, tick. And it's like, well, what? Let it tick then. Let it tick.
Right.
And you know, either way, whatever happens, I'm going to live a full, loving, effective, purpose-driven life. And that's
right.
It.
Right.
Don't you think so?
So you're not going to be under pressure to have kids. Ever.
I'm not going
to
be, but if my clock runs out, God will provide. That means if I'm supposed to adopt or something happens, and that's what happens. And
that's
guess what?
True,
I'll be
yeah.
just as in love with that
so
kid.
So one way or another, you can have kids. So it's
yeah,
not
like,
a question of...
Yeah, like, you know, go adopt a kid from China when they're throwing away daughters left and right.
Would you?
Oh, yeah.
You would?
Yeah, if I had the means to do it. I had the support. Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, why not?
That's pretty good.
Little babies, little baby girls just hanging out waiting till they die, pretty much.
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, so, I mean, you're saving them, but is that what you really want? I mean, do you want, you know, a... let's say an Asian kid,
and
they're always going to look different from you.
Who cares?
Maybe they do. I mean,
maybe they'll be happy that they get to order off a menu.
Maybe
they'll be happy that they get to eat and live and breathe. I mean, I kind of think that difference isn't bad. I mean, I don't care.
It's not it being bad. It's just about the kid, you know. But then again, you're right. I mean, they're better off alive than.
Don't think there's anything wrong with having like parents and I mean, I'm sure for kids they. I think kids are very resilient, and I think that as children, they kind of think that they are each other. Like, you get babies, and they grow up in a certain family, they think, oh, I'm Asian, or I'm white. They don't really know. They kind of think that they are their parents. And it takes time through life that they experience, oh, okay, well, I look different. But it's not bad. I mean, adversity breeds a lot of beautiful things. You know, challenges breed good things. And I just think about God's love, and God loves us. God's love is unconditional. It is so above and beyond. It's not based on if we're good or if we earned it. It's so deep. And because of my experiences, like my aunt, even though we are related, I didn't know her when I went to go live with her. I barely knew her. I mean, yeah, I saw her throughout the years. That was my Aunt Deborah. But we weren't close. And so I went to go live with her, and it was kind of awkward at first. And then I just kind of felt, it just felt weird, you know what I mean? Because she's not my mom, she's not my dad, I don't really know her that well. Well, it was such a gift from God because she and I were so similar, and her personality and I are just so alike, and it's kind of a huge blessing. And I felt more related to her than anybody else that I've been.
Yeah, so how did you end up there? I mean, did your parents send you there?
No, it was, it's a really messy story to be honest, but my dad was, quick story. My dad was going through divorce and kind of falling apart. And through that time, I was like, well, I'll just go. I suggested, you know, kind of my aunt intervening and stuff because she was helping us through the situation. And then
right.
We ended up moving next door to her. I ended up living with my aunt, literally next door to my dad. My brother stayed with my dad.
Right.
And then my dad moved, and I just stayed with my aunt.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So it's kind of extremely unconventional. But it was such a blessing, and I felt what it felt like to be adopted.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling of, like, you don't have to do this, and I'm not really yours, but now I feel like I'm yours.
Right.
And I feel like you're my mom. And that feeling is pretty powerful. And I thought, well, if I feel that way with somebody that took me in and loves me that way, I could do that for somebody.
Yeah.
You know, I can take on someone at some point in my life that we're not, we don't have that. Because love is love, really.
Right.
Love is love.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm so hung up on, continuing my genes and everything.
Well, I don't think that's bad either. I mean, there's something really beautiful about wanting to pass on your legacy, right?
Right.
And men especially want to pass on their name, etc. And I think that that's healthy. I think that's beautiful,
right,
too.
But they can do it with adopted kids, too, right?
But, yeah, but, like, love is love. I look at you every time somebody comes in. You guys, when Sam has a guest in, every time they leave, I watch you. You're so loving to people. You give them a big hug, and, you know, you're just so warm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really sweet to see you with people. Cause you're,
I don't know if I like that description of
you. It's a good. No, he's a major a-hole.
Yeah, I'm an a-hole.
No, you're not. No, but you're very, like... I noticed that you give everybody a hug. It doesn't matter if they're a man or if they're gay or whatever. You're not freaked out or anything. You just give people a hug and you say, thanks for coming in. And think about that kind of transaction of just making somebody feel welcomed and loved. And I think that that's pretty profound. And I think just love is love.
Right.
Meaning with kids and stuff, you can love anybody.
That's true. That's true.
And they can feel like they're yours. I mean, my aunt always makes a joke. She's like, man, it hurt giving birth to a teenager because that's when I moved in with her.
Yeah.
And I'm serious.
That's when it all started, the catastrophe.
Oh, man, we got into so many fights and everything, and we learned a lot about each other. But there's just never been anybody I've been more close to as far as, you know, like a parent.
Yeah.
So I just experienced on the receiving end what that's like and how close you can feel. So I mean, you know, you can definitely adopt a kid that doesn't know anything, and you know, have them in your family.
I think maybe it's a man thing, you know, maybe it is a man thing, although, you know, I'm sure many men would love to adopt, but
I think you're right. But if somebody were to bring home a little Asian girl, like 3 years old, and she climbs in your lap and she's playing,
right,
and she becomes your best little buddy.
Yeah, well, obviously, you're not going to push her away, but it's not the same, you know.
I mean,
it just
doesn't
feel the same.
You're right. I think you're right. But after a while, wouldn't you just be like, it's your kid.
I mean, yeah, you can see that there's some amazingly loving parents to adopted kids, you know. I mean, they do treat them as their own.
Yeah.
And I think that's admirable, you know. I mean, I love that. I love that about people.
Yeah.
And but you know, that's the thing, is that when it's other people it seems fine, but when it comes to you it's sometimes like not the same, you know, or at least in my case. You know, so
well, I guess that's what I'm saying, is when I get whatever age I get, I mean, everybody, I'm still in my 20s, I look good, okay, I'm fertile, but hypothetically if the clock ticks and the eggs dry up or whatever, guess what, I'm still gonna be rocking and rolling.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Loving life.
All right, so one way or another, Kiara is going to have kids, right?
Possibly. I'm not sure.
No, I mean, that's the plan.
Because I'm not going to adopt without being married.
Right.
So if I'm not married, I won't.
No, you'll be married one day.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I'm not stressed out about it, though.
No, otherwise you won't be. You'll be out of sex for years.
I know people have done that.
That's crazy. Is it true that Lady Gaga has got celibate now? Did you hear something about that?
I think she read I read an article. It doesn't surprise me, to be honest, because I think people that have had, and I don't know her life intimately, but I just off of interviews, when you constantly, this is, okay, you're in entertainment, you give a lot of yourself up. So when you do entertainment, and you're, I mean, especially somebody like her, because she's pours out, but creatively through your music, you're expressing a lot of emotions and thoughts and feelings, and then visually, you're kind of, everybody's got a piece of you, right? And then you add the sexual element to it, where sex is part of your act, or, you know, sexuality is part of your act, and sexuality is constantly what's kind of inside your art, driving your art. You feel like you're pouring it out to everybody. Maybe not in the act physically, but just your sexuality. So you could kind of feel, I think, maybe a little bit like, I don't know. I think in a way it can kind of exhaust that side because everybody has a little bit of a piece of it. And that's fine if that's the way you want to go. But I've also seen her in interviews where she's talked about really being what people would call sexually liberated and definitely experimental. And that's the idea I got based on the interviews that she gave. And I think that when you are so free with it, after a while you feel used up. Mm. And I'm not saying that she feels that way, but I know friends, this one guy I knew who was just, and he's a dude, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he would just, you know, he loved, or he said he loved just doing it with anybody. Just, he just wanted the experience. He wanted different types of people. People were like flavors. They weren't really people. Mm-hmm. Different styles, different types, different, different models.
Different moans.
Yeah, different everything, right? Well, he pushed it to the max. And then he was like, one day he came in, he's like, I don't want to have sex anymore, ever. He's like, I just want to be held.
That's weird.
Well, no, I mean,
that's fucking weird.
It's not, though, because think about this. It wasn't like the guy played the field a bit. Mm-hmm. He had so much loveless encounters.
Mm-hmm.
That you can only run off that for so long.
Right.
And I think that it's just human to kind of, it catches up to you and you go, and not that he didn't stick to it. It's not like he didn't have sex again, but he was just expressing that he was tired of pouring out and not getting anything really back emotionally, intimately, and loving, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that if, again, going back to Lady Gaga, and I don't know, but if you are constantly pouring out yourself sexually to audiences, and then if you're having a sexually liberated life yourself, if that's what you want to call it, it could get to where you're just like, you know what, I just need a break from this.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I think wasn't the quote something like, she thinks it's stronger to not need it or not need a man or something like that.
Sounds like something she'd say, I'm sure.
But it makes sense.
Yeah.
Does it make sense to you?
No, it
really?
Doesn't
what
really,
do you think?
No. Well, I don't know the real reason, you know,
oh,
but
okay.
If we did, I'm sure we would talk about it more intelligently. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm you know, after you brought it up and stuff, you know, then I think of celibacy and I think, you know, I mean, I could never do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a big denial of your humanity, I think, you know. And
do you think it's ever okay?
What, celibacy?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not about okay or not okay. I'm just saying how I view it. You
yeah,
know?
But you said you think it's, I mean, I get what you're saying, and you're saying personally it's not for you, and I get it, and clearly it shouldn't be because you're married, so that would be weird. But I'm saying, like, do you understand if anybody ever chooses to do
well, something? Well, I respect that, yeah, but
yeah.
But I feel that they miss out on a lot, you know? It's just a part of life
yeah.
that you know. But anyway, we've beat this horse to death for so many times. You
yeah,
know?
But it's interesting though. I mean, that's an interesting point to it. Just, I don't know. It's like that lady said. You know, you can push the envelope, but don't tear the envelope. And I think some people have torn it, and they just want to take a step back and kind of regroup.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that could be why. Who
that
knows?
Could be it. Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, but I find the busier I am, not just busy with stuff, but the more I'm having just so much fun in my life and great experiences, I'm not as I don't think about it as much.
Right, right.
I mean, I think about it occasionally, but I don't really think about it like when I'm, because it's happened to me more when I've been through some rough patches and I'm like alone. When I was in Detroit for 4 months and I didn't have any friends or any family, my aunt was in the hospital. And then she went to Texas to recoup, and I ended up getting a job there, so I stayed there for a little bit. And it was just like, you're just kind of like, you want connection, and you want human connection and stuff like that. So that's when I got really crazy sexually. I mean, I didn't really do much, but I was like looking. I was on the warpath.
On the prowl.
Yeah, which isn't like me, but it was one of those things where it was just a challenge because I didn't have that normal day-to-day stimulus that I'm used to, and using my brain and my and everything in different ways that I'm used to.
Right. So, I mean, do you recall that you always felt this way about sex, or
what
did this start at a certain point? I mean, you know, what I mean is that was there a time when you actually had sex just for sex, you know, when you were younger, when you first discovered it?
No,
or
I
was
mean,
it always
I've,
like
I've, I always believe that sex is for marriage, but when again, without going into every little detail of my life, I was in a 5-year relationship and we didn't have sex for 4 of those years.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it's because we were long distance, so we could kind of get away with, you know,
yeah.
It was long distance we were together for the first year and we, pretty much lived together.
Yeah.
And that was when I was really young.
And long distance for how long?
4 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Well, you know what? He's my first love, everything. And so yeah, that's so hard. And we're still really, really good friends to this day.
Yeah.
But we broke up right around the time my sister died. And then I was just living in L.A. and it was just rough. And so that's when I was like, fuck this. And I'm like, I'm going to go get crazy. And I didn't get crazy. I think I hooked up with a couple guys through like a couple year period or something like that. Something like, you know, like throughout like 1 year, something like that. And I just remember it was stupid.
Yeah.
It was stupid. I mean, there's the thrill of like, I'm just going to be stupid and I'm just going to, you know, get kind of, for me, it was like a reckless mentality of, I don't really care about myself. I didn't really feel like God cared. I didn't feel like anybody cared.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds dark, but that's true. We all go through weird times like that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I kind of experimented a bit, but it was just, it was empty.
Yeah.
And I really wasn't missing out. I mean, you kind of feel like, oh, I'm going to just do what I want. I'm going to do what I want. So there's a thrill in doing what you want when you want it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't anything amazing.
Right.
It wasn't anything that I was like, wow, I'm missing out.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what's great, I think the cool part about sex is like what you have or people that are married or can have, which is the same person in a different experience each time as opposed to the same experience with a million different people.
Well, that's the ideal, but it doesn't quite work that
way. Well, I don't think anything.
I think you have like a certain view of marriage and stuff that's not necessarily true or not necessarily prevalent, you know?
Well, I think you're right. And I mean, I hold to that because that's what I want.
Yeah.
But I think everything takes work. And I have friends that are married that I know some of the intimate things of their life. And you're right. I mean, stuff takes work. I think if you really want certain things, you have to fight for it and you have to make time for it and you have to work on it, right? It's not if you want a certain kind of, you know, connection with your spouse, it's probably, at first, it's probably going to happen involuntary, right? It's just going to kind of go that way. And then over time, it starts to become, you become very familiar with the person. And
You
become comfortable, right?
Yeah. What I mean. You know, I think part of sex is discovering new things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why marriage can be difficult for a lot of people, you know? Because it's, you are sort of like stuck with one person, and that's what you have to do, you know.
Yeah.
And for men, you know, it's like our urges to, our instinct is like to spread our seed as much as possible, you know. So, you know, I think that's where it comes up. I mean, I feel that marriage is not a natural situation to be in, because it's just, what happens is this, when before you get married or before you settle down, you're always, you hope that you're, well, not hope, but let's say you're attracted to the other sex if you're heterosexual, right? So suddenly when you get married, you're supposed to stop being attracted to them, which is unnatural.
Yeah.
So what happens is, and so it's not just for the man, for the woman as well. So, you know, suddenly it's like you're not supposed to look anymore and just focus on one person. But there's, I think, those forces pulling on you all the time. And so it makes it sort of an unstable condition, and that's why I think it requires a lot of hard work. Because
you're right.
If you don't, you know, it's just you're gonna just be pulled away by your natural instinct, and that is.
Well, I think what you're saying is honest, right?
It's well, very, yeah. I mean, everything I say is honest. Yeah. I don't fuck around.
You're a dark side. Everything I say a lot. You're right. It is. No, I think that when you're honest and you're really upfront about how you're wired and kind of taking the challenge to be with one person for the rest of your life, it takes really knowing that side of yourself to know how to stave it, how to kind of suppress it at times or redirect that energy. And I think that that's a process in and of itself. I mean, you're right. You go from being single where you look at everybody, you kind of want everyone to, oh, this is the person I want to be with for a life partner. And you go, okay, we're going to be together, which means I do to you, I don't to everyone else. And then you have to learn how to not let those natural desires dominate what you do have with someone else.
Right.
And I think that that's admirable. I don't think there's anything wrong. I think it's great for people to be that honest about this is hard and how do I work on it? And you know, because clearly you're married, and I don't take you for a guy that would ever cheat on his wife.
Right. And it is about priorities. No, I never have, never would.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just you know, that's a decision I made a long time ago when I was cheated on. You know, when I was like 16 or something.
Yeah.
And that left a scar. So I, you know, maybe it's a good one, because, you know, I've made a decision not to cheat on anybody, you know. The way I view this is, if you want to be with other people, then break up with them first and then go mm-hmm. with other people, you know. But it's just not fair to lie to someone and cheat behind their back, mm-hmm. someone who you've been very close with.
Yeah.
You know.
But you like being married. You seem like you like being married.
I do, but I sometimes wonder what it'd be like if I was single.
Don't you think that's kind of the grass is greener? Like, even if you were single for a long time.
It probably is. That's why I'm staying married. You
yeah,
know?
I just yeah. think that wherever you are, be grateful. Because I think that the grass is greener is part of our condition as humans, like mm-hmm. our flaws, where we have a hard time being joyful and content because we constantly are afraid we're missing out.
Yeah.
Or that there's something better. Because everything has its pros and cons. So if you're single...
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. So it's a trade-off. It's always a trade-off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you said you prefer being married than when you were single, right?
Well, apparently so. I am married.
Yeah.
But so it's got its ups and downs, you know? I mean, there's advantages and disadvantages.
Well, that's what I think of when I am in a position where, like, if you're saying you're in a position where you're like, man, I'm really struggling. My eyes are wandering or,
yeah.
you know, or I'm finding this to be monotonous or whatever the issue is. I think it's always good to go back to the drawing board and go, wait a minute, look what I do have, mm-hmm. and reevaluate, and then have that feeling of gratitude again, and it could refuel a passion.
Right, right.
Because I think yeah. that being in my position, I have to do that because I have gone through times where I'm like, man, I really want to be with somebody, or I really want to have be physical, or I want the emotional element, or I want somebody to be there for me. Mm-hmm. But then I think about everything I do have, and I'm like, well, you know, there's a time for it, and if it happens, great. And then I just get excited about life again.
Right, right.
Because I kind of yeah. go, what
just
are you going to do?
Embrace what yeah. you have.
Exactly.
You know?
It's like, exactly. And I feel grateful that I do have such freedom.
Yeah, exactly. Think of how many people would love to be in your position, you know?
And I forget that because, you know, it just like you forget what it's like to come home to somebody that's just done your laundry and, like, loves you and thinks you're hot. She says you're hot every day, right?
Right.
And look at you. He's lighting up. His face is lighting up.
I'm not lighting up. I'm just thinking that yeah, you're so idealistic, you know?
No, it's not. It's true, though. She says you're hot every day, right? You told me every time you wake up, she says you're hot.
Yeah, that's true. She does.
And that's just an awesome thing. Like, yeah. having somebody there that's on your side and that's mm-hmm. always there for you and
right.
thinks you're number one. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's not
but
easy.
But I don't know. I want everybody to think I'm hot. That's the thing, you
oh,
know?
Yeah.
So it's not
enough. So it's not enough,
But
yeah.
it doesn't mean you can't be married and still hope that people will think you're hot, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that's life. What are you going to do? So we have a guest coming soon, right?
Yeah, she's going to be here at 10.
At 10 o'clock. Cool. Cool. So we're going to take a little break. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
shitty talk radio proliferates the internet. Two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Kara in the morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
I miss you singing. There you go. You see? It's always part of that. Were you thinking of doing opera?
I did it for a little bit. I mean, I studied it.
Did you?
Just a little bit, like in high school, and then I went to a year of college. And what I found is that opera, well, not all of opera, but a lot of the studying of it, it's very technical.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not really moved by music technically. So mm-hmm. when I would choose a solo that I wanted to sing that moved me, they'd go, oh, no, get this one. It's much more vocally challenging. It has all these runs and these arias, blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, yeah, but it doesn't sound as good to me. It's not as pretty. It's not as moving.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, but it's going to really show your range and be much more
right. Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah, I know. And you want to do it naturally.
You want to do something that actually moves somebody, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why, you know, I mean, I've thought of taking voice lessons and stuff, you know, singing lessons. And I realized that, you know, it is too technical. I mean, there's a lot of breathing involved. You
I'm
have
not
to
believe in having like some of the ABCs.
The throat works and things like that, you know.
Well, I think it's good having something like the ABCs of how to sing so you mm-hmm. can not destroy your voice.
Right.
And have different, you know, ranges you can do. Like opera is total different placement of the sound
mm-hmm.
versus singing belting, you know.
Yeah. But I got to tell you, I don't get opera at all.
I'd freaking bust them out for you, but you hear them a little bit like.
No, I'd rather not.
It's beautiful though. It's so beautiful. There's some of it is just moves you to the core.
Really?
Oh.
Wow.
Oh my gosh, some of it just.
I never see that.
Some of it can move you to the core. It's mm-hmm. but everything moves you differently. So a listener, Chris Brown from Colorado, he just wrote today.
Hey Chris.
He just wrote me the quote that I was looking at. It says, was this the Mother Day quote you were referring to? It says, of all the rights of women, the greatest is to be a mother. And it's Lin Yutang, who's a Chinese writer.
Mm-hmm.
That
sounds good.
Of all the rights of women, the greatest is to be a mother.
Mm-hmm.
I get it, but I don't totally agree with it. Because
okay.
What about women that aren't mothers? Like, you know what I mean? Do they matter? Are they as important?
No, I don't think he means, or the saying, I don't think it means more important, I think.
It says the greatest is to be a mother. The greatest thing
of
a woman...
Of what? The greatest of what?
It says of all the rights of women...
Rights.
The greatest...
Okay, so it's a right. It's not something that you have to do, and it's not something that defines you, but I think as far as the rights, what women are okay with doing, I think that's what this means. You know, I don't see why you're seeing leaving women that are not mothers out of the equation here. I don't see that.
Well, I feel this way. I'm reading it is that if women have all these different rights, there's different facets to women.
Right.
But the most valuable, the greatest one is mm-hmm. motherhood.
Yeah, as opposed to men. Men can't do that. You know, they don't have the right to have a baby. You know, so maybe that's what they mean.
I don't know.
The difference between men and women.
Mm. Well, I don't know. I mean, I definitely value it. I definitely think it's so unique. It is in its own class, right?
Yeah.
It definitely is in its own
it
class.
It is. I mean, it's a different feeling. And I think until you're a mother, you can't really tell. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I obviously will never be one. But seeing mothers and seeing the tribulations they have to go through and the good times they have to go through, it seems like a joyful experience.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You should try it sometime.
Well, we'll see. Stay tuned for the next few years. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Not on any rush, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I see my friends go through those first couple years of having a kid.
Yeah.
Up all night. Can't go to the bathroom without having your kid there.
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, if I'm like, hey, let's go grab a cup of coffee, it is work.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Your kid is going to have a field day with your boobs, I'm telling you.
Who? Oh, my kids?
Yeah, whoever your kid is.
They're going to
be very, very lucky.
That's funny. Actually, well, who knows?
But no, that's why I say that I think men are attracted to breasts because of that. You know, I mean, you know, you come out to the world and it's thrust at you and that's your source of food.
Were you breastfed?
Yes. I was.
Oh,
and I
really?
Was fascinated with boobs, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if people aren't breastfed if they care as much. Do you think so?
I don't know. Never thought of it that way before.
Well, I'm thinking like if maybe some of them aren't, if maybe some of them aren't, you know, breastfed if they actually are boob guys.
I'm sure.
If you were like my brother, he has a girlfriend who's just beautiful. She's just, I don't know how he landed this girl. Okay, mm-hmm. Like she's good to him. You know, Dina's good to you, like that kind of good. Like she does.
So you don't know how he landed. Like, why he doesn't deserve someone like
actually,
that?
Actually, my brother's a real sweetheart, but I know him as my brother, who's like a little bit of a you know, a little bit of a. Can I say this? Dick cheese. He's just. Sorry, guys.
Yuck.
That's awful, but that's he's just a. Do you know where I got
it's
that
called
from?
Smagma, right?
I don't know what that is. But my this is a funny story. My stepmom was so pissed at my dad one time, and she was vacuuming, and he had just left, and my stepmom was like crazy, like literally crazy. You didn't know when she was gonna snap. Like she was so cool, she had like a Zima in her hand or something, and then she'd just snap, and she's like mad, and he's in the other room. She's like, Dale, you dick cheese. And I just remember laughing so hard because I thought, oh my gosh, I never heard of that. That's awful. Sorry, guys. But no, my brother's just kind of, he's my brother, and I just see him as being just a little brat. But he's great with his friends. But this girl is so good to him. So my brother's birthday's coming up, and she's getting the recipe of how to make these homemade donuts that my grandma used to make for him on his birthday because he wants that for breakfast. I mean, he's getting hooked up. Like, he doesn't deserve that shit, but whatever. I'm happy for him. But this is really funny. So she's really, really great, beautiful girl and just so good to him. But she's a very small-chested girl. And he loves her. He thinks she's hot. But at one point, she said that, you know, she'd been saving up to get implants because that was something she wanted for years. So she'd been saving up to get implants. And he was telling me this. I hope they're not listening. I don't think they are. That he was like, whatever you want to do. Because that's what the guy is supposed to say, right?
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do.
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say don't do it. I'm totally opposed to boob jobs.
Oh, okay. That was my question because he said he goes, like he loves them. The way she is now, but you know, he does like boobs, but it's not a deal breaker.
Exactly. And I mean, is she like thin?
Yeah.
Yeah. You see, that's the thing. I mean, small breasts go with thin very well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, if you see a, you know, really overweight woman with small boobs, then it doesn't look very good.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that's why I say it's sort of like part of the package. You know, you take that thin girl and you put big boobs on her, it's not going to look good.
Well, maybe
and
just
they
like,
don't look natural. I like natural looking breasts,
yeah.
You know?
So just the idea of any kind of, do any of them look real though? Do any boob jobs feel
I've
good?
I've never seen one that looks real.
Or any that feel good?
Some
I've
of
never...
them are better than others. As far as feeling good, you know, I've only been with one woman who's had a boob job. It wasn't a relationship or anything. I think it was even a one-night stand. But, no, they didn't feel good at all.
Really?
They don't, no. They don't look natural. I mean, I like natural. You know me, you know?
Mm-hmm. I know you.
Yeah. You know, I like pubes, you know, I like I like real everything, you know.
That's funny.
Yeah. No, it's true, though, you know.
I tried getting my friend who's married. I was like, she was having her baby, and she's like, they're going to think that I'm a stripper at the doctor because she shaved it down there. I'm like, no, that's called 2010.
Exactly.
You need to get like a freaking lawnmower down there and take care of that shit. She's like, but her and her husband like it like, you know, full blown to max. And I just think that's so gross, but whatever. It's just not that it's bad, but to each his own, right? But it's just so funny because and so I was asking her husband told me, he goes, I don't know why I like it that way. He goes, but my first experience ever seeing it was my buddy and I were in the pool, like they were kids, in a swimming pool, a local swimming pool, and there's a really hot lifeguard that they had a crush on, and she came over to yell at them, and she was in her bathing suit, she bent down, and some of her bush popped out, and they were like, she was yelling at them, and they were just staring.
Yeah, it turns them on.
And then she walked away, and they both were like, did you see that? They were like, they thought it was so hot.
You see, that's
the
thing with
kind of
me
first
also.
Memory, their first memory.
With me, with the first memories, it was like that, because in the 70s, that's when I came of age, let's say. I was a teenager. That's, you know, during that time, they were not shaving. You know, nobody did. Nobody even thought about it. So it's funny because the latest Jackie Collins I'm reading was actually written in the 80s.
Oh, really?
So she's talking about this woman trimming. And I thought, you know, if it was written today, you know, there's no trimming, there's shaving, you know.
Yeah.
There's taking
waxing
it all off, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's funny, you know, how times change.
I know, it's really, really funny. Yeah, I have a really good friend, though. He likes it, full-blown.
Shave?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
No, not shave.
Oh,
he likes it full-blown, which is funny.
Bush.
Yeah, he likes it. And he also...
See, a lot of men do, because, you know, especially men that are older.
He's in his 30s. He's not older. He just likes it. And he also says he likes... This is so gross. I can't believe I'm telling you.
It's like a beard.
Ew. But he said this, and he's a guy. This is guy talk. But we're really good friends. He just tells me... I'm always like, ew, I can't believe you told me that. But he likes what he calls a squirrel tail, where, like, just where her hair goes up the butt.
No,
I'm
that's
like, you
too
are
much,
just disgusting.
Man.
He likes, like, that's a little bit
much
of hair back there. I'm
yeah
like... Just be with a man. Like, what's your problem?
Yeah.
That is so nasty.
No, in the ass, I really don't want to see it, you know?
No, he likes to feel it. Whatever. Anyway, yeah. Gross. Sorry. Non-family-friendly show.
But it's funny how styles change, you know, and it comes to that as well.
Mm.
What's interesting is in many cultures, women don't shave their armpits. It's just not something that's done.
I know. Isn't that kind
Europe,
of weird?
A lot. You see, that's the thing. It's not weird to them.
Is it weird to you, though?
Yeah.
So if you see a woman that's like, hey, hi,
yeah,
how's it going?
See, when I was a kid, all women had armpit hair. But now nobody does. Yeah. But, you know, that doesn't turn me on. Not the way the pubes do. You know. So bush is good,
I just think about, like,
much
odor. Just hair can, like, hold odor.
That's true. But you know what? If you take care of it, it's not bad. You know, besides, a little, you know, a little smell down there is okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Know?
You're going to make me throw up, please.
What?
Please.
It's okay because we're human. I mean, that's something I would expect from you to say.
What?
You know, since I'm like, totally averse to bad smells and stuff. What I'm telling you is that, it makes you smell human. You know, it smells like sex. Obviously, you wouldn't go down on a woman.
I did.
You did?
When I was 13.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You actually went down with
mm-hmm
your mouth? Really?
Yeah.
So it wasn't just fingers?
No, I did when I was 13.
Really?
And it was the most
nastiest. Obviously
nastiest
didn't. Yeah, because you didn't know what you were doing at the time.
I didn't need to know. All I knew
besides
was, like,
little
it's
girls,
same...
I'm sure she didn't take a shower before.
No, my point is it's like the same size of magnets. Magnets, you know?
Uh-huh.
You know how we try to push two magnets together that are the same and it won't?
Yeah.
It repels each
right
other?
Right, exactly.
It's that. It's too... It's like, oh, this is the most grossest.
Is that how you felt then, too?
Huh?
At the time, did you feel it was gross too?
Yeah, it was disgusting. I
really?
Was like experimenting.
So why did you do? Oh, so you were just curious.
Yeah, we're just experimenting.
Right.
We're experimenting, and because I was young and wanted to make out, but really didn't make out with boys yet because
right
I was like nervous. So yeah, I made out with girls.
Right. Yeah. Many
not a couple girls, but it was just so gross.
Yeah.
So disgusting. I was like, this is the most. Yeah,
wow.
And it took me a while to realize like that guys like it because I was like, oh no, this is not something I'm ever gonna do.
Yeah. You see, that's the thing is that you had like very few experiences, and you extrapolate based on them, you know? Again, you know...
You don't know all
the
experiences
said,
I've
no,
had.
No, I don't. Obviously, I don't.
You didn't know I went down on a girl. I'm telling you, if a girl at 13 goes down on another girl at 13, mm-hmm, guess what?
What?
And she doesn't like it, she's going to... You're young, so you're going to think that's how men think.
Right.
Men don't think the same way as women.
Right.
So you have to kind of, like, get that out of your head. I'm just
right
saying, growing up, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
For a while.
Well,
I realize men...
A lot of men don't like it. But I know.
I feel like a lot of guys do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I meet guys that do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's a very intimate thing, you know? It's like face-to-face with a vagina. I mean, there's nothing more intimate than that. You know, that's why I think it's more intimate than intercourse. You know? Mm-hmm. Some women can't handle someone doing it to them, though. I think because, I mean, so let me ask you this. Now that you think it's gross and stuff,
think what's
would
gross
you feel eating...
Yes,
vagina,
yes, yes.
So
for a woman, it's gross. It's
oh,
the same,
for a
it's
woman,
the same
so
thing. It's the same thing. Like if.
So you don't think it's gross for a guy too? I mean, don't are you
no,
like grossed
I
out by it?
No,
to allow
no,
a guy?
No. I think okay men have a different attraction to it.
Right.
It's not. It's like if you were to go give that to a man, and you're a man, and you're
right
not gay,
mm-hmm,
you're gonna have a really gross vibe.
Yeah.
You're gonna be like, this is disgusting. But if it's a
probably
woman,
but for women it's different. You know, men have that whole stigma of gay, where women are not so concerned with it.
No, I'm saying you may be young and experimenting. I mean, I know guys generally don't experiment like that unless they're gay.
No, guys do.
Do they? Heterosexual
yeah
guys?
Yeah.
They'll go down on the...
Just for the same reason that you mentioned. That
so have you?
No, I haven't. But I know people who have. And the thing is that
and
it's
not
the
gay?
Same. You know, when you're very young and you can't
and
get
not
girls.
Gay?
Yeah, if you can't get girls.
Okay.
Well, maybe they are gay. But, you know, at 13, you know, if you do it just because you can't get girls, I don't think it's gay. You know,
that's
but,
weird. Or I don't know. Maybe I
don't know what happens in prison. I mean, most people that go there are not gay.
Yeah.
But many end up having sex with other guys.
I think a lot of that has to do with power too and domination. I think that there's a hierarchy in prison, and
right.
it's about making somebody your bitch sometimes. So
maybe, but I think
of,
there's a
I don't,
lot. Of,
I think sex is used as power, is what I'm saying. So I think there's a dominating thing.
Well, maybe in some part of it, I can totally.
I don't think that they're all into it. I think it's more like a maybe it's like rape is an act of violence more than it is an act
well, yeah,
of sex.
Well, yeah, yeah,
so
but
think
that's
what they're
rape.
They're raping a lot.
But
of
I don't think a lot of it is rape. That's what I'm saying.
In prisons,
you know,
a lot
think,
of it's rape. Don't I drop think, the soap, all that kind of stuff. It's like.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think there's guys there that are just desperate for any kind of sex.
I think that too. Yeah, just to get anything.
Just to get anything. You
yeah.
know?
No, but I see that men see women differently than women see women, and it's just like women have the same stuff, so it's not, you know, it's just wrong. I mean, it feels wrong for me anyway.
For you, yeah.
Yeah.
For you.
I'm not gonna.
There's a lot of women that swear by it. You
oh,
know?
That are lesbians.
They say, not necessarily, but women that have experimented. You know, they'll say that a woman is softer and. You know, the kissing is better, and I don't know.
I can see something like that, because there's a texture there. But, I mean, something in, like, that area, mm-hmm. your nether regions, I just think that that's, like, if a woman's loving doing that, then mm-hmm. she's probably a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a woman that's straight going, I just love.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. Like, she's...
Well, that's a label, you know, but...
That's true. Come on. A woman that's straight that loves going down on a woman, she just loves it.
Mm-hmm.
Come on now.
Why? And she... I mean, you...
I'm not saying
I've,
she's
I've
bad.
Never...
I'm not saying she's bad if she loves it, but just don't
it's
call
her.
It's not
don't about being
her.
Bad.
I know it's not. I'm just saying, but don't call her straight. I mean, nobody's stupid here, Sam. Like, if a woman loves...
Okay, so call her bisexual, whatever.
Oh, okay, or
you
bisexual,
know, but,
yeah.
But bisexuals usually have a preference for one or the other. I mean, you know, there's been women here that described, you know, being with other women and stuff, but they prefer men.
Okay, so, well, then my point is if a woman loves doing that, she's at least bisexual, because she loves it. She's attracted
I guess,
to it.
Yeah,
she's
a, if you want to put a label on it.
Well, I mean, what else is it? You're sexually attracted to women. I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And you're a woman.
And you're a woman.
You come up with a label then.
Yeah.
You come up with a title or whatever.
I'll find something. I just think it's a straight woman that loves pussy.
Oh.
Yeah, there you go.
That word, man.
Yeah. Why are you having a problem with it?
I don't know. It's a word that kind of... I don't really love that word.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Do you
but
say,
words are words, you know?
Well, they're words for meaning. They mean something. They have a
right.
connotation.
Right. Exactly.
To them. Yeah.
Exactly. And sometimes I like to use the slang.
Oh, I'm not saying it's bad.
And
I'm
it sounds
saying...
dirty. And that's a good thing.
For you it is, absolutely. The dirtier the better.
Yeah.
The more reaction you get from me, the better. I love it. I notice that guys like that. Guys, it's like little boys and little girls. You know how like a little boy will take a frog.
Try to get a reaction or something?
Yeah, I think guys get off with the girliness of girls. So, and yeah. I don't do it on purpose, but I've just noticed guys that I've usually had attraction with
right.
or boyfriends, there are usually times when they're like, trying to shock me or something or being funny
mm-hmm.
and it's always like stop it
yeah well that was when you were young I'm not trying to shock
oh,
you that's
I know,
just
you're
the way
not.
I talk
no I know but I think that guys kind of have this sense of like it's like they like to pull the girl's braid or put like a frog
yeah that's true
and they
that's
and the girl true. Goes and I think that there's something to that they like makes them feel like powerful or something
I don't think so they just want attention they want the girls
or maybe,
to like
maybe that's what it is
yeah power. I don't think kids understand that too much.
No, it's not like a conscious thing.
Mm.
And maybe it's not. Maybe it's just attention, like you said.
Yeah.
But maybe something like that.
Yeah. What's it like having lipstick on you?
Here
I mean,
you go. Try
I can't,
it. You're strong, man.
I can't even handle
Ready?
Chapstick.
Catch.
No, I'm not. But, I mean, I can't even handle chapstick. And I'm just thinking women
looks
have
pretty,
done,
huh?
It does look pretty. Lipstick does look pretty on women.
Mm-hmm. It's just, it's slick. This is a gloss.
Mm-hmm.
So it's slick on the lips, so it feels moist.
Right.
And it, it just feels good. It gives you some color.
But, I mean, don't you feel like you can't eat anything? You can't put anything in your
nope.
mouth? No.
Don't have a problem with it.
Mm.
Don't have a problem with it.
I was always wondering about that.
Mm-mm. I have a friend though, her husband like won't let her kiss her with like lipstick and stuff like that.
Yeah, I know. I don't. Yeah, I'm the same way because it just like smears all over the place. You know?
Take it like a man. Be proud. I'm saying if you're getting kissed by a woman, you just need to be grateful.
Oh, come on. But you know what amazes me is in movies, okay? They'll kiss with a woman wearing lipstick and everything, mm-hmm. and there's no smearing, there's no nothing. Everything is just very clean.
Well,
very
there's
smooth,
different types. Yeah. I mean, if you get like a lipstick that's you know, stain resistant. I mean, sorry, it's a stain, mm-hmm. and it so it stains the lip. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have that topical kind of glossy vibe, but it mm-hmm. gives you color. You can wear something like that.
Yeah.
Glosses are glosses.
But it will still smear over both faces.
No, that won't. No.
When you kiss.
Mm-mm, that won't.
Really?
Mm-mm. It's the shiny stuff.
Uh-huh.
Is usually the things that will you know, rub off.
Rub off. Yeah.
There's lipsticks that have a lot of that kind of sheen to it. Mm-hmm. That's the kind. But they've started coming out with stains that have the shine in them too. So mm-hmm. the only thing is they never leave your damn lip.
Yeah.
So
what's a stain? That's not lipstick?
No, it is a lipstick, but there's lipsticks and there's lip stains, and uh-huh. then there's lipsticks that are kind of like a stain. Basically, it puts the color on the lip and it sinks into the lip.
Oh,
and
wow.
it just lasts longer and it doesn't like smudge off. Mm. So literally after you put it on and you wait a second or two or a couple seconds mm-hmm. and it absorbs into the lip, you can actually like, you know, wipe your finger across your lip and there's nothing that comes
really?
Off.
It's not
yeah.
Wow.
So it just depends on what, you know, what you have. But also too, if a girl has on like a lipstick, a colorful lipstick mm-hmm. and she's had it on for a little bit and she blots it, which means, you know, you put a paper towel or something over your lip mm-hmm. or a tissue. And then it extracts the excess. Mm-hmm. It leaves the color still there. It kind of stains the lip a little bit. You can kiss with that and not get it on the person, too.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Interesting. And plus, it doesn't taste very good when you're not used to it, you know? Yeah. I mean, women are used to it, you know, but I don't like the taste of it. It's kind of waxy.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, by the time you're kissing, probably, hopefully, it's gone or it's close to gone. Yeah, like I wouldn't go into like a makeout session with fresh glossed lips.
Yeah.
It's for when you go
but
out.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're getting ready to go out and stuff and you got like, you know, lipstick on and stuff, you're not going to like go into a full-on kiss because it's going to ruin everything. They just kind of like...
to the side. Kiss
like
my ear.
Kiss in the
air,
you know.
Yeah. I don't care, though. I mean, if you really want to kiss, freaking take it like a man. There's something about a man not caring. Like my ex-boyfriend was in the military and he stayed the night one time and we made out, of course, and he went to work. He rolled out of bed and he went to his military job the next day and they're like, dude, he had glitter for me. He had like glitter in like the side of his hair and stuff and like a little bit in his eyebrow and he's got this fatigues on, these military fatigues, and people at his job or the military were like, dude, you're either with a girl last night or you're gay.
Oh, you've been with a stripper.
And he's like, well, I'm not.
They usually have glitter.
He's like, well, I'm not gay. And he just kind of laughed because it was cute because I know he felt like proud and stuff. He,
uh-huh.
You know, made him look like a man.
Like a man. All right. Well, hopefully our guest is here. So we're going to take a short break. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Well, I think it's time to get ready.
Got a guest in the studio. Welcome.
Hi there.
And you're Amber?
Yes, Amber Chris.
Okay, and are you guys friends or did you just meet?
I just saw her walking down the street. I was like, hey, we got a show. Are you
yeah,
busy?
Yeah, would you like to join us?
No, I met Amber actually through a good friend, Mel, through Sarah, my roommate. And Amber and Mel are roommates. And Amber's just she's just a rocket and rolling kind of girl. And I get her emails about, like, love yourself. I'm like, what is this crap? And so I go and I look. I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. And I just remember one time we had like a party. She threw an amazing Christmas party. We had so much fun, didn't we? Oh my gosh,
we had a blast.
We were like karaoke. We were dancing to Lady Gaga. It was like Christmas in LA. We were just having so much fun. But I think somebody said, I may have said something like a comment about my body or something, was something negative. And she was like, don't say that. And I remember going, ooh, this girl's got some heat to her. Anyway, I'm going to let you go into it, Amber, okay, about what you do. And she's very multifaceted. But yeah, it was just, there just seemed to be a lot of heart there and a lot of inspiration and on a mission. And I think definitely in the city of LA, that's all driven by the way you look. And it's all about hating yourself so that you can be better. I know, it's weird. So I'm just, here we go, guys. Amber, Chris, go for it, girl.
Well, thanks. Thanks.
Give it up. Woo!
Yay! Thanks for having me this morning. I've built this workshop business. It's called the Now Workshops, and it's all about learning to accept and love what you have right now in this moment. So my main focus is especially for women, love your body now. And I came to it through my own journey. I grew up as a dancer and have been acting, and I think I kind of came along under the philosophy of self-punishment, like believing that a size 2 meant healthy. Mm. And my body type just isn't that. Mm-hmm. So I struggled for a long time. I did like that crazy master cleanser, lemonade, juice, maple syrup.
You're not really, you've not lived in LA if you haven't done the master
cleanser. It's true, right?
At least once, let's be honest.
Right, I mean, but then I got like really crazy. I moved here 6 years ago. I found the master cleanser. I lost like 12 pounds in 10 days.
Really?
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, people would tell me later, they didn't tell me at the time, but like 6 months later after I'd gained that weight back, they would be like, I thought you were sick.
Really?
I thought something was wrong with you. Wow. Yeah. But I thought I looked fantastic.
Yeah.
But the sacrifice to be that size was just too much.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't healthy. That's not my body type. So I went to this amazing master's degree program. I got my master's in spiritual psychology, and it's at the University of Santa Monica. And it's such a unique program. The second year, you spend 9 months on a project, something that you've always wanted but never thought you could have or do or be. And for me, that was, I want to learn to love my body now at 130 pounds, not 115 pounds, 130 pounds now. Is that possible?
Yeah.
I don't know. So I went on this journey.
Hold on 1 second, not to interrupt, but I'm just, because I think she looks great, and I'm sitting here going, 130 pounds, is it really hard for you? I mean, I get it because we're in LA, so I want you to kind of expound on how a lot of girls listening are going to be like, 130 pounds is great.
Right,
and
it's,
how tall are you?
I'm 5'4".
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I look good, but as an actress in LA,
that's like,
I mean, I can't tell you how many agents and managers I've met with who have been like, can you shave some weight off of your hips?
Really?
Off of your legs? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's because the thing is, on camera, you look 10 pounds heavier.
Exactly.
So I'm suddenly 140 pounds. Right. And it's all about your type, you know, like I would be cast as a leading lady or that kind of thing. So they want you to be skinny, right. skinny.
And I don't think people get how skinny. It's like in Hollywood industry, there's no too thin.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You'll be criticized and get great press for it if you're too thin. It'll be great for you.
Yeah, like, it's, yeah, go am on. I allowed to talk? Yeah.
Oh, you talk okay. over girl.
Like, yeah, like, talk over her. Like, yeah, she doesn't stop.
Well, no, but I just mean, like, Lindsay Lohan. I mean, she, you know that she's using cocaine like crazy, and that's how she's losing weight. And I have a friend, actually, who knows her and said that so many people have gone up to her and been like, you look fantastic, you're so little. Why would anyone want to stop doing what they're doing right. to keep getting skinny praise. If that's the feedback that you're getting?
That yeah. isn't Adderall,
but you're,
too?
You're, like, messing up your body so bad. Mm. So bad.
So just because people look heavier on the camera, it's created a whole problem in our culture, you say?
Well, you know, and I think the media is, I mean, I don't like to put blame, but I think they've been very smart. What I came to realize was that women or even I think men as well, I think we all in our mind have this idea of what the perfect body should be. Like, for me, I had this image that, like, until I was taller and skinnier and had bigger boobs, that I didn't have any self-worth. Mm. There's so much of what I stood for was wrapped up in that image. Mm. But the thing was that perfect body perspective is unattainable for me. I can't be taller.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to suddenly stretch and grow, you know, my spine 3 inches taller.
Yeah, spinach doesn't work that hardcore.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You got to embrace your body because you can't fight it, you know?
It's true. You're given what you're given, and it is a gift. Mm-hmm. But I think that the media is really smart. I think that they picked up on this that perfect body that all, like, everybody has this unattainable image that they are trying to be.
Yeah.
And so they then put it, bombard us with it. You know, it's like no cellulite.
It's like hooks you, huh? It's like an addiction.
Totally. You know, and so everywhere you turn, you're seeing billboards. I mean, come on. Like, the thing that I really love the most in this journey for myself is educating and sharing my experience. And one of the things that is really starting to be prominent in the world is this idea of airbrushing and how, I mean, how if you look at an image in a magazine, it's probably not really that person. They've probably airbrushed it like crazy to make her have the perfect butt.
Cindy Crawford said that they photoshopped off 10 inches off of her thighs and hips.
Really?
And this is Cindy Crawford.
Yeah.
And you know, Jessica Simpson says, I wish I looked like my photo cover. She goes, I wished I looked like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's hysterical. It's,
I mean, that's the thing. The things that you're looking at aren't even real, but that's something that you're supposed to try to be.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's.
What do you think, Sam?
What do I think? Mm-hmm. I think all women should be 120 pounds.
Yeah, right.
With C-size bra and no, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
You know, I understand this, but I think you'll agree when you look at a billboard or an advertisement, you don't want to see an overweight person, you know? That's what we created as the attractive images for us, you know, and that's what we're after. But, you know, when you look at other societies and stuff, still, I think you see emphasis on women being thin, you know? In the media, I think. You know.
Well, you know what I've been.
I mean, let's say you go to a place like Europe or something like this, you're not gonna see like heavier women in the advertising, are you?
Not necessarily in Europe.
Well, actually, on the cover of Elle, I think they had their first plus size model on the cover of Elle.
She's
in,
hot.
In Paris recently.
Really?
Was it Hungry?
Yeah.
The girl that wrote the book Hungry. Have you seen her?
I can't remember her name. That's terrible.
She was
terrible,
like, she's beautiful, Sam.
Yeah, she's gorgeous.
She's like so pretty, and she doesn't look overweight. She just looks like a woman,
which is a curvy woman. I think that's there's a varying degree of overweight. Like, you know, I've been watching The Biggest Loser recently, and I never thought that I would enjoy that show because I thought it was exploiting, you know, being large. But it's really a beautiful, beautiful show.
Yeah.
And so I think that, like, if you're talking, I mean, there was a 526-pound man on that show. I mean, there are varying degrees, like, what is considered overweight. And that's the other, it's all individual.
Right.
Like, what you consider overweight is what is different from what I consider.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're talking, like, I think when you're unhealthy, that's...
Exactly, that's what I talk about.
That's kind of something that is... it's dangerous, you know. I mean, being full figured is not necessarily dangerous. It's when you're in like that, your body's
Become like obese. And
exactly.
Stuff.
They talk about your there's those varying degrees. Like if you look at the chart that says your height, weight, and what you should it's actually a very huge range. It gives you a lot of leeway to be different
sizes.
Yeah,
but it's totally inaccurate. Let me ask you this: Do I look to you like I'm obese?
No.
Okay, but
not
on that chart, it tells me that I'm obese because I have a body mass of 24 or something.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Sam's, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, it goes by your height and your weight, and it tells you what your body mass is, but
I think
it doesn't make sense
to me. Your BMI is more about your, I think, the amount of fat.
Yeah.
Because you could be thinner and have a high BMI, which is unhealthy, which is like a lot of fat in your body, like people that don't work out, but they're little.
Yeah, but that chart doesn't take that into account. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know, it just goes based on the numbers.
Yeah.
And it just totally doesn't make sense to me.
Like
you can have,
I guess what we're talking about is like you're not. I mean,
I'm like 5'8" and I'm about 175 pounds.
No, you're totally fine.
Yeah, you're totally fine.
You know,
fine.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, I think there is something.
So don't pay attention to those charts. I'm telling you.
You look good, Sam. We think you're hot. Wait, Sam, you're so hot. So hot, Sam.
Thank you.
That's funny.
I just turned 50, Amber. So
congratulations.
I'm looking for all the.
You look youthful. You look youthful.
All the reassurance I can get.
You look youthful. You look in shape. You know, live life.
You look like you're happy. I mean, I think that's another part of it. When you're doing something that you love, mm-hmm. or you're participating in things that bring you joy,
right.
that's going to radiate from you. I mean, you know, that's going to affect how you look.
Mm-hmm. You know what I found out? A friend of mine told me, she studied this in psychology, is back when they first started doing cinema a little bit more, like in the 50s and things like that. It may have been, the 50s, 70s, somewhere. I don't remember the decade, guy, but it's in the older days. The average, they said that based on the media, like the average size of what men found attractive was anywhere from like a 10-12. Mm-hmm. Okay. And through the years, it went to like a 9-8. And all the way up to now, where it's like a 2-4, and it's based on what people are shown. So it's, if somebody's being fed images, it doesn't matter if it's thin, medium, or large. If they're constantly being fed images, they're going to start feeling that attraction. They're going to start seeing that as attractive. And they also showed that villages like in Africa that didn't have television, and they started, I don't know how the study happened, but they put televisions in there, and that women that weren't concerned with the way that they looked on that level, anorexia started to develop.
Wow.
You know, and I mean, you know, do the research on it and everything, but it just shows a lot of it's what you're being fed and so when you live in LA, and it's not that, because I think men really love women that they love all types of women, but they like life. Men like life-giving. They like to see a woman, whether she's petite or medium or larger, but that's got confidence, and she's got a lot of life, and
totally.
Then they're attracted to her. And women don't get that, I think. They think it has to look like this, but really it's about being comfortable in your skin, and that's really the sexiest thing. It's
exactly.
really when you own your skin and everything.
Exactly.
And I think it's what they see, and we're constantly being bombarded in LA with size 000, tits on a stick. You know, these girls that they're so tiny that can't even support the breast implants. And
wow.
you see like the
they're like concave in the chest. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what pissed me off while we're on the subject?
What pisses you off?
Tell
us.
This pissed me off because they were doing this thing. You know how Heidi Montag had all the surgeries. Okay. We'll get to that because I'm sure you're going to weigh in. I want to hear this. But this woman that was an article writer for like, you know, one of the Us Weeklies or something like that. Or I don't remember what the specific tabloid was, but she was saying how a lot of actresses are going in different directions of doing all natural. So then she shows these girls, Kate Hudson, she shows all these leading actresses mm-hmm. that they're not necessarily natural. They're super little and they don't have boobs. Mm. And I'm like, what about a woman that's natural? That's not natural either. I'm not saying that's not natural for Kate Hudson, but they're using these extremes.
Yeah.
You know, Heidi Montag versus, you know, a girl that's like, you know, super naturally petite, or maybe that's not her natural size. And I'm like, what about somebody that's just, you know what I mean? Like, it's always these extremes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what happens is it's about division. It's about separating. And they have to keep that that energy and that tension there, because it makes people want to buy, it makes people want to be something, it makes them want to change, right?
Well, I mean, what I just thought of when you were sharing that was the diet industry is a huge industry in this country.
Right.
I mean, if you think about even our medical industry and our pharmacies, they're in business they do well when we are sick.
Right.
You know, the diet industry does well when we are heavy.
Right.
So it's up to us to really educate ourselves, and that's what I talk about in the workshop, is learning to listen to your body.
Mm.
Really, 'cause everyone, you have to be an expert of your body while you're in this life. No one can tell. Yes, go to the doctor, see what they have to say, but no one can tell you what is exactly right for you and isn't exactly. You have to try it on and see if it fits.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So when the media and advertising tells you that you're too big, or you're too this or too that, and here's how we're going to solve your problem and stuff. So they're making it into a problem, the way we look.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a problem, and then you have to go and buy their product
to fix it.
Yeah,
make
you feel
and
better.
And when I was in sales, I mean, I hate to say it, guys, but what you do is you create fear, and then you go, oh, wait a minute, I have the solution. Like, hi, I see a little redness right here in your pigmentation, and it looks here that we can actually use a lifting eye serum. You know, I actually have that if you want to buy it. So you create fear. And, I mean, part of it's natural because you're trying to help what people have, but sometimes I notice that some salespeople will really create a paranoid feeling in the buyer, and then create a solution.
That's what it's about,
That you know someone's weakness, and I would say for most women aren't comfortable in their own skin.
Mm.
You know, most women aren't comfortable. They are terrified that you're going to hit on the one thing that they're most insecure about.
Mm. I had a lady go off on me because I was in cosmetics for a while, and she had some redness in her skin. And she had some redness. But I mean, my job was to really help her with, and I do it in a very beautiful, tactful way, because I don't like to ever make somebody feel less than or whatever. And but she got so upset that I brought it up that she was like, oh, your teeth are jacked up and I'm a dentist and you need to come see me. And she's like, you're an actress? Oh, yeah, you are. Here's my card. She got pissed. I laughed my ass off because I was like, it's one freaking tooth, lady. And I was like, there's all different kinds of actresses. But anyway,
that's the thing. You hit on her, probably her number one insecurity, or the one thing that she was most self-conscious of.
And I had women come in my I call the chair, because that's where you do the makeovers. They sit in my chair. I've had a couple girls cry.
Mm-hmm.
I've had girls cry, and I'm like, what's wrong? She's like, I just feel so ugly. And
yeah.
Really?
It just hurt. It breaks my heart, because it's like, it's not freedom.
Exactly.
It's not freedom.
Not freedom. It is a cage. And the thing is, we are doing it to ourselves.
Mm.
You know, there is a choice. That is the greatest human gift, is the choice. You can decide, what do you want to believe?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that is always easy. I don't wake up every morning and sing the praises of, oh, my ass, I love you. You know, but...
Yeah. Maybe you should. It'll make you feel better.
But I have to say, for the most part, I do. I accept and love the body that I've been given. I know how to take care of it. I know.
Yeah.
But that was because I took the time to really explore it.
Right.
I think that's really, really profound. I think it's nourishing. What I found is personally, I feel like people are attracted to confidence, but then they're also threatened. So if you're not a zero, double, double zero, but you're walking around like it's the best ever, and you're walking around like you just, I like it, I got it, it's almost like it's threatening, because you're free and yet you're not perfect. I've noticed that. I've experienced that. Because, I mean, my thing is I think I'm hot all the time. I think I'm super hot.
Why are you laughing?
No, because,
you are hot all the time.
Well, no, because sometimes I'll see a photo and I'm like, oh, okay, I need to trim it up a bit. And it's not because I hate myself. It's one of those, oh, that's my boundary for me. And I'm not going to, you know, yell about it too much. I'm going to address it and then work on it. But, and I'm learning to do that, where I have to just kind of see it, but go on. But it always catches me off surprise, because I can be heavier and still, you know, think I'm really hot in my own brain. And I even said this in my stand-up. I kind of playing with this idea about, I know girls that are like drop-dead gorgeous that are friends of mine. I have a really good friend of mine she's always obsessing about her body, always obsessing about what to look like, and works out all the time, and yet is terrified of people.
Really?
So she's one of these gorgeous girls that just, she's gotten more comfortable, but can't fully accept how pretty she is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what's the problem. Why work out this much, deny yourself the cake, wear the cute clothes, if you're not having any fun?
Yeah.
What's the point of working so hard on your body if you're not having fun?
Absolutely.
I'd rather be the fat girl that, oh my gosh, I can't believe she wore that, and is having fun. Do you know what Chris Rock says? He's like, the best women having the best time, the people having the best time are the big, black, fat women coming up in the club, their ankles be spilling out into their pumps, it looks like a loaf of bread, and they're on the dance floor. But no, he's got a good point, though. He's like, it's like people that are just having a ball. But that threatens people. That threatens people.
Well, it makes people feel uncomfortable, because that is so uncomfortable for them.
It is.
The people watching.
Yeah.
But you make a really good point. It's life is meant to be lived and experienced and enjoyed.
Yeah.
You
right.
know?
Yeah.
It's not.
So, Amber, where are you originally from?
I'm from West Virginia.
Really?
Oh yeah.
So how did you make your way out here?
Through acting, actually.
Really?
I was on tour with Mamma Mia for about a year and a half. And
oh,
we,
really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
It was really cool.
So you're a singer, performer?
I used to. I mainly focus on acting now, and obviously my workshop business. That's actually more fulfilling.
Yeah.
Well, the women, it never in my wildest dreams did I think that this is something that I would be doing, but mm-hmm. there's something when the women are here, are in the workshop, the start of the morning to the end of the day, it's like a light came on. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like a transformation that takes place.
Mm-hmm.
They start to see that they have other options. They can choose a different way of being with their, like, it's a relationship with your body.
Right.
Having a relationship with your body. So seeing that, making a difference like that is so meaningful.
Right.
You know?
But originally, early on, you felt you wanted to get into acting.
Yes, yes.
Right.
That's what brought me out here. I was at the Pantages for 2 months, and it was my first time in L.A.,
How did you get that gig if you were in West Virginia?
I was in New York.
Yeah,
I went to school in Pittsburgh, college in Pittsburgh, and got mm-hmm. a degree in theater, and then I moved to New York, and I was in New York about 5 years.
Oh, cool.
And then moved out here after
that. So that's where you got the gig for.
Which means she's probably really freaking good, because to get those gigs are a big deal. They are.
Yeah.
They're a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, Mamma Mia, for crying out loud.
Yeah, so that's awesome.
Mamma Mia.
Good stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
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 That's very cool.
That's
so,
actually how I met Melanie, too.
Yeah, Mel's awesome, too, huh? But
yeah.
These little rock and roller people, man, they're not messing around. They're like, yeah, I was on Broadway Star, and I'm out here doing my thing now. I love it. That's so awesome. So then you just kind of progressed into, how did your transformation come to where you said that you went to the school and you took on the task of really wanting to have a relationship with your body, accept where you are? What were kind of the catalyst for that? What were you, I mean, I'm just assuming being in theater and being dancer, that's just got to be brutal.
Do you mean the catalyst for...
Like, where were you in the sense of what kind of abuse did you experience, either from the profession or yourself, that you were like, wow, this is, you know, what? I guess, what was your low, and then how did that...
Yeah, you know, I think my lowest of the low was when I moved to L.A. I swear.
Go figure.
Yeah, I mean, in New York, I experienced it some, because I was mainly a dancer, was known mainly as a dancer there. So when you'd go to auditions as a dancer, there's mirrors there. So you're constantly comparing yourself to the other women in the room. And I can't tell you how many times I was like, I didn't book that job because I was too fat. I danced rings around her, but I was too fat.
Oh, wow.
You know, that kind of mental torture. But then moving out here, there is just an emphasis on skinny, especially in this industry as an actress.
Did you feel it more in L.A. than New York?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because I've heard it's both, but no, you're right.
Oh, yeah. Just
no,
because the
York.
Camera...
I mean, it's here more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot more, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just but mainly because the camera, I mean, it adds on weight. I mean, this is when I started the journey of, you know, going to meet with agents and managers, and they would be like, can you just shed a little bit right there and right there, my hips and my butt and my thighs. I actually had a guy once he told me this, and I don't know why he told me this, but he said when he was, we ended up dating. But he originally told me that he was like, I don't know about Amber. She's little with a big booty. And I ended up dating him.
What really? The hell? Tell him he doesn't get to touch that if he doesn't know.
Right?
What to,
exactly.
I always say this. I read this on somebody's MySpace quote, and I was like, damn, I love it. He goes, if you can't handle it, don't grab it. Shit, girl. Woo! You can't handle it. Don't grab it because you don't know how to work it. I think I dated one guy for like a hot second that wasn't a boob guy. I was like, well, then psh.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
We're not gonna.
This is the beauty's not gonna be wasted on you. Like I'm, you know, actually it never went there physically, but I was like, oh, okay, well.
I will say he learned to love the booty.
Oh, Yeah, yeah, you don't have to learn to love the booty. He needs to be like happy.
Right. Well, you know. But the space that I was in, I really took it personally. Like I really that was when I started to exercise like crazy, or I found the Master Cleanser, and like all my life I felt like I'd had this skin, this layer that I needed to drop. If I just dropped this layer, my body would be perfect. And so the Master Cleanser did that for me. Mm-hmm. It was suddenly like, oh my God, I'm 113 pounds.
Oh, I look sick, really?
To everyone else, but to me, I look fantastic.
Wow. There
you go. But then that became the new standard. Uh-huh. And if I wasn't 100, I'd give myself to 116. If I wasn't staying at 116 pounds, I would then go into what I call self-punishing actions. It would be either not eating or jogging like crazy. Let me do the Master Cleanser and do a half marathon.
Mm. Yeah.
What?
Are you serious? Did you do that?
Yeah.
You're nuts, Amber, or you were nuts.
Yeah, exactly. But that's how obsessed I was. I believed that that number on the scale was who I was.
Right.
You know, that was where all my self-worth was in my body.
Mm. Yeah.
And when I... So that went up and down, and then, you know, I went through a breakup, and, you know, sometimes during breakups, you don't take care of yourself very well, and I had gained weight and then dropped it again at that point, and then I started to gain it again, and so it was this cycle. It was really a cycle of compulsive eating, so I'd sit down with, like, a pint of Ben and Jerry's every night, and then get to a point where it was like, oh, I'm 125 on the scale, I gotta get back to 116, and then, like, completely go the other direction, so it was this back and forth. I know I messed up my metabolism.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but that's where I was, because I was just, I was so wanting, I was depriving myself so much when I was starving, and depriving myself of not only food, but like pleasure. You know, it was that regimented, I must work out, I must do this, very, not a whole lot of space
for experiencing
joy. So then I'd experience joy, but then I'd get to a point where I couldn't take it anymore, and I'd have to come back. It's so messed up.
I feel like what are you gonna say, Sam?
Well, do you consider that you have an eating disorder?
I would say that I have experienced one in the past.
Right.
And that was something that I found when I went through the 9 months of that project. I really started to explore not only my relationship with my body, but my relationship with food, my relationship with exercise, my relationship with myself.
Right.
Yeah. I would say for me I would have a compulsive eating. Addiction towards sugar. And then
Like many women have that, huh?
Yeah. But I think a lot of it comes from there's a really fantastic book by a woman named Janine Roth. It's called Food is Love. Mm. And it's a lot about wanting and craving intimacy.
Mm. Yeah.
And really using food.
So it's emotional eating, right?
Yeah. Oh,
Kara,
yeah.
Kara, are you an emotional eater?
You know, I thought about it. What I feel that I do is I love to use food to bring people together, and I think that that's healthy. So when, not that I'm perfect, but I like if there's no one around to eat, I'll barely eat, and I'd probably be so damn skinny. But I constantly love cooking and having people over, and that's where I don't really deprive myself, because I like the shared experience of food. And so yeah, I'm not perfect. I mean, yeah, sure, we've all overeaten or ate too much, but I think. Because I have a friend that has a food addiction, and I check in sometimes to see, well, where am I with it? And really, I like the community that food brings, and I think it's sad to banish it from your life, because I know people that do that. Mm-hmm. And that's what they feel they need to do, and I can't judge them, you know. But I feel like food is more fun to eat with people. I love sharing it. I love cooking it. I love... Like, we had a little get-together the other night. People came over. We didn't even know. We just had, like, a great, hey, eat this, da-da-da-da-da. And, But I don't really think it's so much like that. Other than it's emotionally, I think it's celebratory. Mm-hmm. And I love, maybe I don't need to do that every night, but, you know, I usually eat with people.
Yeah. Yeah. So what age were you when you moved from West Virginia?
27. Oh, wait, moved from West Virginia to.
Yes. I mean, were you young to New York? To Pittsburgh. I'm sorry.
Pittsburgh, yeah.
So that was
so
college age.
Yeah, so
okay.
I was probably 21.
Right.
Is that what you are when you graduate college?
Something like that.
When I moved to New York?
22.
Yeah. Something like that.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So did you like New York?
I did. At the time, I really loved it. It's a nonstop go. I will say, since moving to LA, I've noticed that I'm a very different person. I went back to New York to visit for a bit, and it it's like sensory overload, and it's so aggressive. I mean, I used to be so aggressive and forceful with things, and you know, since moving to LA, that's calmed down a bit too.
A lot more laid back.
Exactly, and I'm happy about that. I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people in my life probably are too.
Well, it's funny because I even feel like LA, depending, like I live in Hollywood, you know, and it's sometimes I feel like, man, I think it's good to get out of LA too, because even though it's nothing compared to New York, which most places aren't, it still has its own go.
Yeah.
And it's still kind of that, like, especially if you live in the city, it's everything's,
it's work. All around you.
It's
all the time.
It's stimulus. And last night I was working on my, I was editing some footage, and then, I left at one point to a coffee shop, and I came back home, and just my roommates in and out, and then me doing my thing. And I just felt so much stimulus. I'm like, I can't get a fucking alone. I need to be alone. I need to be in a field of wheat somewhere, just working on this thing. You know, just some, so that feeling of there's just the quiet isn't, unless you live maybe in more of a rural area, the quiet isn't as prevalent here.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I live in Woodland Hills, so
yeah,
I get some quiet.
It's nice. It's nice. I've been to her house. It's so nice. It's relaxing over there, too.
Yeah,
it's very calm, much more.
I've always been like that. Even when I lived in New York, I never lived inside the city. I would live either in Queens, or I'd live like in Washington Heights, which was way like in the 180s.
Yeah.
I need the space away from it. I can't be in it all the time.
Yeah, that's the thing about being in Hollywood. It's kind of like you're in it. And I was like, but it's not, California's beautiful. You can just quickly get out.
Exactly. So there's mountains, there's ocean, there's, I mean.
That's why I love hiking. You can just get away and be like, wow, I'm not in the city. I'm like I'm in the wilderness somewhere.
Yeah.
With a cell phone in case something gets me.
Yeah.
So, Amber, tell us more about your workshops, because I got to tell you, you know, I do comedy. I made jokes about it. I was like, I think Mel was telling us something about it. I was like, listen, I'm not going to a thing with women with mirrors and we're all going to sit around looking at our vaginas and loving ourselves.
Sounds good. I would go to that.
But you know that funny like scene of like, no,
right,
let's bring out the mirrors and just stare
no,
at
them.
No, it's not like
it's
so
definitely not that.
Yeah, I just had to make fun of it.
Of course, you're Kara. You so gotta.
I gotta make fun of it.
Make a joke.
There you go.
It's a one-day intensive, so it's 8 hours. There are a couple breaks in there. You get a lunch break. But it's what helped me on my journey. One of the first things that we really talk about is this image, this perfect body image. I mean, it's really, this part is really fun. We get it all out. I mean, we put it on the board. Like, what is your perfect body? Well, she doesn't have any hair on her body except for the areas where she's supposed to, and she doesn't have any cellulite, and she's taller, and she has bigger boobs, and sometimes she has smaller boobs, and depends on the person. You know, it's funny to have women in the same group being like, well, mine's taller with a bigger butt. Mine's taller with a thinner butt. You know, really talking about it, because it is very different.
Yeah.
But then going from to the realization of really looking at her, because the thing is, if you're constantly looking through the eyes of the perfect body, this image that you have of the perfect body, if you put on those glasses and look at your body through her eyes, you're never anything but a failure, ever.
Yeah.
Your body is a failure. So what then happens is your body becomes the enemy. Like, your personal body becomes the enemy.
Right.
So then you start to blame it and criticize it and stuff it or deprive it or, you know, all these punishing actions. It can be over-exercise. It can be no exercise. It can be overeat. It can be no eat. But really, it's, you're not taking care of your body.
Right.
Your life force is probably flatlined.
Yeah.
So from there, we go into another way of seeing things, another way of looking at your body. And then I guide through steps of just action steps that you can take. We do a movement section. I think it's so important. Like, your body gives you these amazing gifts. Your senses, seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smell, that's a gift. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And your body's constantly talking to you, too. It's communicating with you all the time. If you eat something and you feel really bloated or you feel really gassy, your body's talking to you.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe that particular food isn't great for you or your body, or if you're super tired or if you're feeling really dehydrated or if you're getting headaches. Like, these are all ways that your body communicates. So it's kind of awakening to those clues. Because I'm all about health. That's what I really get to, and really exploring what that is for you.
Mm.
Because only you can determine that. You know, and actually, this past workshop was amazing. There was a woman that I asked them the question, what is healthy to you? And they were writing down some of their answers. And one woman said, I said, did anything surprise you? And she said, I wrote down that being healthy is boring. But it's so true. If you believe that being healthy is boring, then why would you want to be healthy? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You don't want to be boring.
True. So you got to change your beliefs.
Exactly. That's what it. I work on the physical, mental, and emotional, spiritual levels. Mm-hmm. It's really, because it's all involved.
It's holistic.
It really is. Mm-hmm. What you're thinking, you know, I thoughts equal feelings, feelings equal action, action equals results. Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking, I don't like my body, and that's what you're thinking all the time, mm-hmm. then your feelings are going to be probably shame, embarrassment, guilt.
Right.
And then that's going to cause you to take actions. That's what I call the punishing actions. So like overeating, undereating, criticizing your body, negative self-talk, things like that. And then the end of the final result is that you're not taking care of yourself. And then you just continue this cycle. Mm. So if you can learn how to change the thinking, then the rest goes into place, falls into place.
Right.
And it's actually really fun. I developed a 30-day workbook, and this is what I did. I have people track their food, and most people, when they hear that, they're like, oh my God, you know, they don't want to do that. It seems so tedious. But it's not about counting calories or counting portions. It's just tracking. It's just knowing, okay, this morning I had 2 pieces of toast and some Greek yogurt. Well, you know, maybe was my stomach up? Maybe my stomach gets upset around, you know, 11 o'clock and I ate at 9:30. Maybe one of those things caused my stomach to be upset.
Mm.
Or so you do that for the whole day. So then you can start to listen to your body.
Mm.
You know, if you woke up with a headache, well, what did you have before you went to sleep the night before? Maybe you had a bunch of wine, or maybe you had some sugar, or, you know, maybe you're not getting enough sleep, or, you know, it's all about that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, and your body responds. It responds really quickly.
Yeah.
This is a side note, but I have such a good relationship with my body now that this is where I decided to start putting together the curriculum for the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated from the university where I got my master's in August, the last day of August. 4 days later, I was in the hospital with appendicitis.
Really?
Yeah. And what happened was I woke up on a Wednesday morning and I was like, something feels weird in my stomach. Something just kind of feels weird. And it was, the feeling was with me all day, and it started off at my belly button, and then it kind of moved down to my lower right abdomen. And at one point, my dog jumped up and sat on my lap, and I was like, ow, that hurt a little bit. So I looked up online. I talked to a friend of mine, and he was like, it sounds like that could be your appendix. But in the meantime, I'm happy. I'm laughing. I'm joking. I'm joyous. Like, it doesn't look like I'm sick, right? So I look it up, and the symptoms are similar to what could be appendicitis. So I thought, you know what? I'd rather be safe than sorry. So I walked myself over to urgent care, and the nurse staff laughed at me. They're like, you're fine. What do you think you have appendicitis? You're fine. Because I'm laughing and joking with them and talking. I'm not like, I guess most people who come in are like doubled over in pain. And because they usually don't come in until right before it bursts. So the doctor came in and she examined me and she was like, you're pretty tender there. We're going to have to do a CAT scan. Sure enough, my appendix was inflamed. It was the very initial stages. But I didn't experience any pain. I mean, I just knew my body so well. I knew something wasn't right. And so then, go ahead.
No, you were just, you're preemptive about it. You were like, yeah, this is off. So.
Yeah, so let's check it out. And then in the 4 days that I had a kind of recovery, I mean, well, I was in and out of the hospital. I wasn't even there in like 12 hours total. I was, you know, I gave myself some free space of, I'm just going to give myself some bed rest, you know. But then in that downtime is when I got these ideas. It was like I was downloading all this curriculum, all these ideas for the workshop, how to facilitate, what to bring. I mean, it's so...
Yeah, I see what you're saying. You're just so in tune with where you were and what was going on that most people would just kind of ignore it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So how can people get a hold of you if they are interested in this?
Yeah, they can check it. The website is www.thenowworkshops.com. You can write me at amber@thenowworkshops.com, but all the information is there. I'm leading a couple of speaking events as well. There's one in August for sure at S Factor Encino. It's free. I give an hour talk. I'm all about just getting this information out there and helping women. I think women are these amazing creatures, and we carry so much angst with us every day in regard to this issue. So if there's one woman that I can help, because if you can release that and empty that bin, what's going to come into it, what's going to fill it. It's amazing stuff. What filled it for me, what took its place for me was love, these workshops. Mm. You know, like loving women, this creativity that comes forth. Exactly. It's freedom. Exactly.
And then you can actually focus on other things that are more life-giving or things that you'd love to do.
Completely.
So you're doing the speaking engagement. Where is that again?
It's S Factor Encino. That's also on my website. They're located at Louise and Ventura. And I'm telling you, as a woman, if you've never taken an S Factor class, S Factor's pole dancing.
Oh, I love it.
It's like S Factor is the sacred pole dancing place. There's no mirrors. It's in a dark room. It's all about you and your relationship with your body and accepting who you are now. So what they do is, because I led a presentation in the Los Angeles location, they'll do a 2-hour intro workshop, and then I'll follow them with the presentation. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun.
I did pole dancing the other day, but in a bar, and it was a blast. But I did with my friend, and he could like lift himself crazy, and then I was underneath. Like, I tried lifting myself, and like kind of climb the wall a bit. It didn't look sexy, but it was fun, and it was almost like at the jungle gym. You're just like, I'm gonna go for this.
Yeah,
shit.
It feels a lot like a jungle, a playground for women.
Yeah, I mean, a jungle gym, and so my arms were like totally sore the next day. I was like, ooh, workout.
Yeah,
like, I could see why that's such a great workout.
Yeah,
these pole dancing things.
Absolutely, and then I have the intro workshop. And actually, I'm offering a special rate for your listeners today. It's usually it's usually $125, but if anybody is interested, I'm offering a rate of $99.
Oh wow, okay, great.
And the workshops, you can sign up and you can sign up for it now, but the next workshop is July 24th, mm. and then there's one in September, September 12th, and then one in November, November 6th.
Mm. Okay, so I think you emailed it to me, so what I'm going to do is post it on my Facebook and tell listeners, if you're listening and you are in the LA area.
We'll put it on the website.
And we'll put
it
on the website.
Awesome.
There you go.
Yeah, it's actually, I don't know if you want to talk about the Body Heart campaign. You're going to be participating.
Yeah. Amber has selected me because I'm so pretty. No, just like,
you are.
Well, and that's not why. But
you are the epitome of this work. Like, you love yourself and you listen to your body.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have room to grow in all that area, those areas. But no, I think I definitely live my life like, get on board or don't. But tell them about the heart, because I'm still learning about it. But I've
come up with a campaign for a positive body image. I don't know if you're familiar with the No Hate campaign. It's about acceptance of any sexual orientation. You know.
Yeah.
So in their campaign, what they did. Well, I'll just talk about my campaign. The Body Heart campaign is it's all about promoting positive body image. So it's women of all different ages, shapes, sizes, races, really standing forward and owning, I love this in my body. So if you log on to my website, you'll see a video of all these women with hearts on their faces, mm-hmm. and then hearts on their favorite parts of their body.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's very simple but profound.
Okay.
You know, most
Any
women.
Any pictures of genitals there?
There is some side boob.
Really?
There is some side boob.
I'll have to take a look at it.
That's good.
but most women spend the day thinking about what they hate about their body.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I really love, what do you love about your body?
But men go through that as well, you know?
Do they? Because I can't get a man to fess up.
No, really. Men do go through these
but
things.
But do you remember when we had Jerry on and I was like, tell me guys, if you're out at the beach with the swimming trunks and the dudes next to you have six packs, are you going to feel insecure? He's like, nah.
I told you I would.
Oh, you did say that.
Yeah, I would.
It's because you're honest.
Maybe.
Well, I've talked to a few men who are interested in what I'm doing, and there may be a time when I open up. It would have to be a separate. It can't
right.
be men and women together.
It's not as big a demand by men, yeah.
Right, but it is true that women aren't the only ones who have this image and try to be this unreal. Mm-hmm. image, you know. I heard a story once where this woman, her agent knows like the publicist for a very well-known soccer star, mm-hmm. David Beckham. Mm-hmm. Well, they were told that there's, I think it's a Calvin Klein ad or something like that.
Uh-huh.
They were told to give him a 32 pack.
Really?
Not a 6-pack, not a 16-pack, a 32-pack. So it airbrushing happens for men, too.
Yeah, I guess it does.
Is that possible, a 32-pack?
No, it's not even remotely possible in life. But airbrushing, it's anything's
That's
possible.
That's bullshit. Yeah. Like, why would you even... Hey, we made him a mutant, guys, for fun, just to kind of up the ante a bit.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But it happens. Yeah, yeah. It happens.
Yeah. I think it's nuts. And I think, listen, guys, if you can't handle it, don't grab it. That's my motto. So rock it, don't stop it. That's
okay.
What I think.
So if I feel I can handle it, I should grab it.
No, you may
not. Okay. I thought that's the opposite of what you're saying, or the flip side of it.
I feel like too, as a woman, what's helped me, and it's still a process. Like you said, you don't wake up every day singing these praises to your butt. It's the same thing with me. There's areas I'm working on that I want to tighten up and really feeling empowered to know how to do it, as opposed to feeling oppressed by it. You know, just have to do that. But at the same time, what's helped me is looking at women or looking at my body through the eyes of men. Has helped because men look at women differently, generally. I mean, except for maybe some of the guys out here, but some of the guys are like women. But generally, men look at women very differently. Mm-hmm. They don't look at them under the microscope with the same standards. They usually look at women through more of a peripheral and more of the essence of a woman. And I've experienced so much of that kind of attraction. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's really helped me to kind of go, well, what my skinny friend tries to judge me and doesn't get is that I'm kind of rocking over here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've experienced that. And my ex-boyfriend, who we're still friends, I said, go look at this picture of me. I said, I think I look kind of like a fat girl in it. And he looked at it. He's like, baby. I'm like, what are you doing? I look like a chunker, man. He's like, no. And I'm like, you are such a walrus. I told him. I was like, you're such a freaking ogre. He's like, that's a woman. He's like, that's the way a woman. He was like, that's the way a woman should look. I'm like, you are so Texas right now. But it's true. Like, men look at women differently. And there's not a one size fits all. I mean, everybody's different.
And women are supposed to be different from men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somewhere along the way, we decided that we would be men, you know, like many women take on, we all have masculine and feminine in us,
mm-hmm.
but many women, in order to prove themselves in this world in many different ways and create equality, have done it using that male energy.
Yeah.
And I think what, you know, the Dalai Lama said in October of 2009 that it was going to be the woman of the Western world who would save the world.
Oh, wow.
And I really, what I take that to be, and you feel free to disagree, but what I take that to be is it's the women are going to come back and embrace their femininity.
Yeah.
Like, women are supposed to be different than men. We're supposed to be softer. We're supposed to be more nurturing. We're supposed to be gentler. You know, all of those things.
Well, you wanted equal rights. You got them.
It's true. And there was a big sacrifice in order to make that happen. And it's like, we have that now. So let's come back.
It's about a balance, though. Yeah.
Exactly.
You definitely need both.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Amber, you're awesome.
You're awesome.
You.
You guys are fantastic.
Great.
Thank you for having me on.
Sure. So give us the website again so
www.thenowworkshops.com.
Okay, awesome. Check it out and check out our website, my Facebook.
Okay, Amber, you're a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Congratulations on the workshops and everything.
Thank you.
And are you going to be on Mamma Mia here too? Or
no.
That's behind you already.
Yes, that's done at this point.
Okay. Any performances coming up that we should see you at? No?
No.
So you're into this now. That's
yeah.
it. Okay. Sounds good to me.
Awesome.
All right. Maybe I'll come in and peek sometimes and see what's going on. Maybe there's a few body types that I might like there. Anyway, thank you all for joining us. Kara, thank you. And we'll see you all tomorrow.
Bye.
You have been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, originating from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. If you have questions about the show or would like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondence to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.